Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our special guest is the awesome Kat Noon, CEO of Starik, and we're going to talk about designing for accessibility. This episode is brought to you by UserList, a lifecycle messaging tool for your SaaS product. At UserList, our mission is to make your founder journey more enjoyable and less overwhelming. That's why we built an email automation tool that does exactly what you need, no more, no less. Manage your users, segment them, and get in touch throughout their journey, all based on their behavior. Try UserList free whenever you're ready at userlist.com. Hi, Kat.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's a big honor to be finally talking to you here in person. I've seen you doing amazing stuff online. So for our listeners, tell us more about your background story first and what you're up for with Starik.
Oh, geez. So background story. I think, where do you want me to start? Do you want me to start at the very beginning? Do you want me to start at how I even got to it? We'd be here a while. I don't know. I think background story, I was born and raised in New York, in Brooklyn. I was raised by my grandparents and I guess always had a fascination with technology. You know, I didn't have a computer in my house for quite a while, but I got access to computers in school every now and again. And I was fascinated by what they could do. I was just everything that came with it. You know, I remember sitting on my grandmother's or my grandparents' stoop. You know, that's the stoop. I don't know another name for it. I guess, so I'll just describe it as in New York, we call a stoop the stairs that are outside of your house. When it connects like the lower level to the higher levels in a New York apartment, like brick apartment. So, you know, I was sitting out on the stairs in front of the house, the stoop, and one of my friends was sitting next to me I was maybe 6 or 7. And I remember having a debate about computers and their ability to be infected by bugs and overtaken. And, you know, even thinking back to it now, like, I remember him arguing and I was just so adamant about it. I'm like, no, it's possible. And, you know, fast forward, we see I think the next war that this world has is a cyber war. And so, again, always was fascinated about it. Always loved simplicity. Always loved products that were beautiful. You know, that were fun and easy to use, just overall delightful. And so I think, you know, and I was always fascinated with art. And so those two aren't one and the same, but I think it kind of alluded to this, you know, eagerness to bring that to, you know, a computer when the time came. Just obviously didn't have the lexicon for it or the idea of what came with the world of tech at the time. And so, you know, fast forward to college, I'd go to school as a bio major with the intent to end up in pediatric neuro, and then, you know, realized that I was just doing it for a mix of the wrong reasons. And also, I couldn't fast forward 30 years and see myself being able to do that. You know, there's a very mechanical and research side to things, but there's also predominantly a human side to it. And I didn't want to become numb or content with needing to deliver news to parents that their children died or they wouldn't make it, or, you know, so on and so forth. And so it was like, you know, yeah, not for me. And so I'd eventually drop out of school, but was working in education, specifically in the world of, you know, in education, what's considered special education. And so for me, that already was eye-opening. You know, I was working with kids in early, it's considered early intervention. So you get the intervention for, you know, services early on. And that obviously helps majority of the time when it comes to, you know, helping kids move forward with their education plan and what they need to lead successful lives. And so there, you'll find children there that have, you know, a spectrum of physical, social, neurological, cognitive, disabilities or disorders. And so, you know, on paper, you see autism, cerebral palsy, just, a slew of a list, a laundry list. And so that was eye-opening because that was the first time that I realized that that systems could be designed as well, and that generally speaking, the systems were not set up for anyone to really succeed unless you fit this very descript profile. And it was usually, at least in that space, able-bodied. And that's because it was designed by individuals that are temporarily abled, you know, and so that was very eye-opening. And you know, I then eventually jump with, you know, both feet into the world of tech. You know, I had all the while been building up, you know, I was working full-time, and then I was working, you know, second job as you know, designer, you know, in the evenings and night, building up my portfolio and whatnot, and then jumped full-time after I had like a beefy portfolio that was worth something. And then over the course of time, I'd freelance, I'd go on to lead design for ADP's innovation lab. I led iOS design for IAM, which at the time was a Instagram competitor, you know, with a user base of 25 million people, you know, consulted, jumped into the world of startups, you know, co-founding my own, and then eventually would kickstart Stark a couple years ago. And I think everything that I'd learned growing up with my group of friends that was so diverse, to working in, you know, going to school and learning all I learned, and then working in, you know, for the New York City Board of Ed and also private organizations or school organizations, I learned a ton, but I had no idea what I had coming with Stark. You know, like, you know, we realized how convoluted, you know, compliance, you know, and go even granular, accessibility compliance was for, you know, in general and you know, specifically in this new world of software, where a lot of what comes with it is very gray often. And there are things that are very black and white, but you know, much like any document, very much so open for interpretation. And with that, a lot of fear and uncertainty and doubt, a lot of confusion. So it was like, yeah, there's a, you know, we came to realize once we put out like version, like what we call -5 of Stark into the world, that there's a much bigger problem at play here. And it was like, yeah, it snowballed. And we're like, there's something here. Let's figure out what it is.
Give us an idea of what Stark is as a company, because it seems like you're SaaS by, you know, technical definition, but the way you talk to the world, it feels like you're, you know, humanitarian organization on a mission. And I'm still unsure, like, if you like how you operate financially. And I just heard that you closed your big round of funding, which huge congrats on. So tell us about that, you know, organizational structure that you've developed over those 2 years.
Sure. So we are a SaaS company. Yeah. We are an enterprise play at the end of the day. But we've come to realize, like, we do, to answer your question, we are mission driven. And that's why we're in a really good position to do what we do, is that, you know, we are on a very big mission to make the world's products more accessible for everyone. And so we, you know, Stark is this go-to suite of integrated accessibility tools for your product design and development team. And so we help teams build accessible software products more efficiently. And we do so by integrating with the tools that, you know, your design and soon your engineering and product manager teams already use. And in turn, we help you optimize your workflow through this like really intelligent automation. And the result ends up being this significant reduction in cost for you as a team. We decrease your time to compliance. And with that, we decrease your financial and legal risk. And you get a product that can be used by everyone. And I think for us, we're building software to help software teams. But the big goal, like that secret sauce at the end of the day, is that we, much like you, are in it to make sure your customer base can succeed. You know, we're in it for the end user. They're in a world where, and this is what we beat into like a drum hard, is that we work in the world of tech. And there's no reason why anybody should be prevented from accessing the world's innovations. You know, like we've managed to land shit in space. Why is it that software is still inaccessible? And I think, you know, realistically, you as a company, you're losing out. There's an ethical side to this, and there's a business side to it, and they're two sides of the same coin, and one can't exist without the other, unfortunately. I wish it could be just a conversation about ethics, but it can't, unfortunately. But you as a company, if you don't want to have a conversation about the ethical side of things, well, let's have a business conversation. You're losing out on a shit ton of money you know, and you're putting yourself in a very vulnerable position by not, you know, financially and legally, by not accounting for a large group of individuals. Mission driven. We have a community, a very large community, a very robust community where, you know, digital product designers and engineers and product managers, you know, gather to discuss all matters regarding accessibility and compliance and ethical practices and whatnot. But, you know, we came to realize that there's a much bigger problem in terms of why teams are unable to account for this. It's not, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with like Hanlon's razor, but it's often not ill intent. It's often ignorance. And that's not to say that people are stupid. That's to say. It's that they have no idea how to do this. And much like any other aspect of our job, you have to learn. But the content and, you know, the resources and whatnot out there are confusing as shit. They're not human readable. They're inherently inaccessible. And so it's like, well, how does Stark, as part of that offering, as part of that SaaS offering, how do we make it so that we're giving you the tools to do this right where you are, baked into the tools you're using on a regular basis, and the educational material and the resources to do this important work? And so that's really what we're up to. And also, yes, we closed in August. We closed our first round. We raised $1.5 million from phenomenal investors, institutional and angels alike, you know, some of the most prominent leading individuals in the world of tech. And now that helps us, you know, explore and experiment all the while, you know, building out this very robust community that has, you know, invested in us from the very beginning.
So technically, you are a set of tools, plugins for the popular design tools. I mean, I'm trying to translate yes. translate the visionary words into how that works in real life. So your set of tools for Figma, Adobe XD, and Sketch,
yep.
is that your primary like tech like implementation, or is there anything else on the stack that you are sharing with your subscribers, free or paid?
So that is the primary right now. We are baked into Figma, Adobe XD, and Sketch. And over the course now of the next couple of months, you'll see that we move from being only, you know, design focused to expanding out into developer tools and expanding out, you know, what we provide for your entire product development team. Having said that, there's more coming, but I'm leaving it out as I'm not saying anything else. So there's my hesitance. But yeah, there's, like I said, there's that side of things. I think the best way to, I think, describe it is that for us, there's two sides of the coin when it comes to product. There's the manual side and there's the automated side. And so on the manual side of things with these integrations, we give you the tools to do this work. Well, that's, you know, contrast checking, vision simulations, and a slew of features that are, you know, under that umbrella, and then expanding out what we allow you to design and build for when it comes to accessibility. And so that, you know, see over the next couple of months, that expands out even further. You know, we roll out features ideally, you know, every month, and 2021 will be no different. So that's the manual side of things where we give you the tools to do this work, but you can still take it into your own hands. You know, we're giving you the education with it to help you. And then there's the other side of the coin in terms of, you know, the future of Stark. And what we're aiming to do, like I said, through this intelligent automation is to automate the process. You know, I think if anyone, you know, read the TechCrunch piece that was done for our announcement in October for our funding and our massive rebrand that we did, you'll see that Ingrid, who did the phenomenal piece on us, compared us to, you know, Grammarly for, you know, said Stark is like Grammarly for accessibility, you know, and software. And so naturally, we have a lot of integration partners coming up. But our big goal in order to help you decrease that time to compliance, in order to help increase your education level, is to take these repeatable processes and automate them. And so, you know, integrations are a big part of that. And, you know, again, there's no reason why this shouldn't be intelligent and it shouldn't be automated. And so that's the approach that we're taking without giving too much away in terms of what we're up to.
If we zoom out of your tool in particular into the industry in general, we've been really brought up to speed with, you know, legislations and things like that when it comes to privacy. But it feels like there's not been enough spotlight on accessibility and our legal obligations and compliance that you mentioned. Is it mandatory for all software companies out there?
So I think a few things come into play when it comes to mandatory. I think it's where you're based, you know, in different areas. So the EU is just generally with regulation more stringent, they're more strict, you know, than say the US. And that's because they actually enforce their regulations. And so, but that's now changing drastically in the States. So there's also, you know, the same regulations in a variety of different areas around the world. But let's just take the EU, like with GDPR, you mentioned privacy and whatnot. And you know, now going over to accessibility, you know, in the States and the EU. So it depends on a few things. One, the size of the company, the intent of the company. And so for instance, if you are a registered hospital, but you have only two employees, let's just say, you already have to comply with every regulation when it comes to this. And that's not just HIPAA, but you know, accessibility compliance. And then you have tech teams. So let's take Dropbox, for instance. Dropbox is a large team, but it's small compared to, say, a Microsoft. But they both still have to comply, especially as they go on to offer options in their business model, like enterprise. And so, you know, they, as soon as you get to a point where there are, you know, integrations happening and you're providing a service for a certain group of individuals, certain tiers you're looking to meet, you have to comply with these things in the same way that you wouldn't construct a building without a ramp for wheelchairs. You can't get to a certain point where you're providing a service or you're, you know, holding X amount of employees and don't comply. So you have to. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Like you have like a super early stage startup in, say, fintech. You know, if you're, how many people are you servicing? You know, if it's a very small amount, if you've barely got a product out there, if you're not interested in having people, you know, trade money, you don't have to do these things, you know, more than likely. At that stage, it's more of a, you really should, but nobody's going to ding you for it. But then as you get to that next tier, you reach this point where, you know, there are certain things you need to comply with, all the way from accessibility to, you know, depending on what you're doing, the SEC, you know, and what have you.
It's great how you compare that with, you know, planning, building infrastructure and making a ramp. And I imagine that can be really done better if done early. Mm-hmm. So as we have a ton of product people listening to us who have small, you know, startup kind of products, SaaS, I don't even, B2B SaaS, is it B2C more, probably more important than B2C. So what can they all do at early stages to ease that pain of compliance later down the road and just to be overall ethical about it early on?
Yeah, sure. So I think it's important to remember that we have a job as designers and engineers, but you know, for the sake of this conversation, let's just roll with designers. Our job is to create a delightful experience, to make sure that it's a delightful experience for everyone. It's a product that everyone can use, and to service the business. And if you're not designing in a way that results in the company making more money, you know, or rather, let's just call it surviving, you're not doing your job right. And now if you were an illustration designer, you know, maybe that's different. It's you know, but we all have the same goals at the end of the day. We're all trying to convey a message that results in an individual moving forward in the experience. And so when it comes to this work, there's a reason why we started with design software. And it's because we know that, you know, through our research with our partners, that when this work starts at the very beginning with designers in that concept phase, you know, even go further into the branding phase, but for that matter, designers are part of that conversation, it decreases compliance errors for engineers at that handoff by a drastic percentage, almost 50%. And so when you look at that, that return on investment is very high. And so why would you start with engineers? It's ass backwards. That, you know, we're taught to measure twice and cut once. Why would you do anything opposite? It's going to make more money. It's going to make more work for you. You put yourself in a position where you set yourself up for more errors, and it doesn't put you in a position to actually provide a really great product for your users. And that's the thing, you know, accessibility is a byproduct of inclusive design. Something is accessible because it's usable. And it's usable because you eliminated this usability gap. And you did that because you didn't exclude anyone from your product based on the color of their skin or their gender or their socioeconomic profile. You know, people can access that fintech, you know, app that you know, fancy fintech app that you just built, regardless of where they're from. You know, even if they lived in like rural America, they can still access their money on a regular basis, you know, and they don't have to worry about driving several miles or, you know, several hours away or whatever to access their money. It's all done digitally. And that's what I mean when I talk about accessing innovation. It's down to that. And so we started with designers for that exact reason. And we said, then, you know, we'll expand out into the world of developers and, you know, product managers, because this is not a single discipline issue. It's an entire product development pipeline issue that's happening. And so Stark acts as that foundational layer that cuts across instead of being these individual pillars and a team. And so when it comes to starting with this work as designers, and then same applies for engineers, I think educating yourself, and you know, Stark is here for that, on this work is a great first step, right? Like we talk about how we worship the, you know, human interface guidelines that Apple puts out, and we read that as part of our homework, and it's fine, great, wonderful. This is part of it. And Apple, as you see, go onto Apple's website, accessibility is front and center. Accessibility has its own section in the HIG, and that's for a reason. Understand how to do your job right. You focus so much on what the perfect shade of blue is for that button to convert. Well, you know what? Part of that is accessibility. If nobody can see the fucking button, it's not going to convert because they're not going to click it. And so educating yourself on what your job entails as it relates to this, you know, we have resources, we have educational material, and we also at Stark have a really, really robust community, like I said, of designers, engineers, and product managers in a Slack chat, you know, our Slack community, where people are really eager. It's everyone from beginners to experts that are in there having discussions about the work we do on a regular basis. Everything from what the hell is an alt text to how do I even read these ratios on my contrast, all the way to, you know, very philosophical debates about whether or not personas are necessary in the work that we do in product development. And so super, super educational. I urge everyone listening to join that. It is something that us on the team tap into and learn a ton from, because we're learning as well. You know, much like technology, everything, all of this evolves. So it's a great mini course in there of, you know, resources and education material, if you will. But yeah, getting started with the basics in terms of like the top things that you know, help you, you know, meet these requirements is a good place to start.
What is the go-to resource again, so that it's not like you have to join an ongoing community, which sounds like a big commitment, but rather than like a get up to speed kind of resource, maybe done by you or another source out there?
Yeah, so I think off the bat, I highly recommend reading the accessibility section of Apple's Human Interface Guidelines. It's very educational. We also have a blog, you know, that has discussions about this, you know, these topics. We also have a support link where, you know, we obviously tell you how to use Stark, but in there we're talking about the different things that occur in this work. And so with the commitment of the actual Slack community for Stark, I want to make clear there that that's you. Whether on the free plan for Stark or the paid plan, you get access to that. And any community is a commitment. But at the same time, there are people in there that hop in and simply ask a question and get that feedback and can go back to doing their work, or can, you know, search the channel and find the answer that they're looking for. But at the same time, you know, once they do that, we've found that a lot of people stay because they get to learn significantly more, you know, rapidly than they would if you were just Googling, and get access to individuals that this impacts on a regular basis. You know, I think we forget when we're designing and building products that, you know, part of that is user testing. And that's part of why the discussion around user personas is so, like, is such a hot take, is that nothing is as good as testing with individuals that this impacts. And that's individuals with temporary, permanent, or situational, you know, various abilities. And so, you know, I think it's important to remember that disabled doesn't mean unable. And there are plenty of people that are eager to help you improve your product so that it, you know, they can use it. And so you get that access in that community. But yes, Apple's Hig is a great place to start. And keeping in mind again that this is a byproduct of us making a product usable. And so over the course of the next couple of months, you'll see that we'll be putting out a slew of resources and, you know, a library of content that is super organized, so you can find this easily. So look out for that.
If we wake you up at night and ask for like top 3 or 5 things that each of us should be doing in our products when it comes to accessibility, what would those be? Some core things that we've got to get right.
Okay, so the top 3, that's so hard. Like, how do you prioritize one over the other? So I'm not going to put it in any particular order. I'm just going to say the things that it's true. Like, how do you prioritize like vision over like hearing, right? And so things that automatically off the bat, make sure your colors are accessible. Make sure the contrast is high enough. Accessibility and beauty are not at odds. I'm very proud of the Stark rebrand. Take a look at our site. You see that you can use these really beautiful colors and this really beautiful typography and create a brand and a product that people can fall in love with, and it's still accessible. So use colors. Yellow is never generally a good idea as a button color unless there's a darker color as a label. You know, make sure those colors are meeting those contrasts, that AA and AAA regulations. The other thing is make sure, you know, individuals can use your product with a keyboard. They can easily navigate it with a keyboard, that they can use it with a screen reader. So your type hierarchy, your header, your headline hierarchy needs to be set up properly. So they need to know, a screen reader needs to know what an H1 header is versus an H4 to go through and navigate that. And so, you know, easily accessible and usable with a screen reader. The contrast of your colors, like your primary buttons and your text and whatnot, is not this like super light gray. Nobody can f-ing see the light gray. I don't care whether or not you have any form of different abilities or you are considered legally blind. Nobody can see that light gray. Include alt text in your images. And so designers, a good way to help there is to involve, you know, the copywriters or the communication designers on your team to work with you and the engineers to make sure that that copy for your alt text on your images is in place. And so just for clarity, alt text is a written description that accompanies an image. And so it's used as this like main source of context for people with visual impairments using screen readers. And it's also displayed in situations where images simply didn't load because like internet connection or some shit. And so I think those are the things that immediately come to mind, making sure that you have, you know, closed captions for individuals that can't access sound or can't hear at any given time. You know, if they can't watch that video, you know, and or rather hear that video, they can still read what's being said. And closed captions are incredibly difficult to get right, so it's important to pay attention there. Yeah, those are the things that that come to mind. But having said that, there's a laundry list of things that need to be done. And so I never want anyone to believe that just because I rattled those off that there isn't a ton that you should be prioritizing, because there is. And hopefully, you'll see in the coming months now that Stark expands what we allow you to design and build for even further.
Are there any products out there that are doing an absolutely great job and that you aspire to and that, you know, can partner up with you and share your values in that area?
Oh, for sure. So there's a few that we really love. The obvious, which we go back to, is Apple. They do a fantastic, fantastic job. Microsoft obviously is spearheaded inclusive design, universal design, and they have a beautiful, you know, toolkit for designers, which is another thing to check out. Designers and engineers and product managers, go check out the, you know, Microsoft's entire like inclusive design page and their toolkit. Another company that's doing a really beautiful job is Fable. And Fable is in the space of user testing. So they allow, you know, digital product testing. And that whole company is powered by people with disabilities. And so we help, they help as an organization, you know, stop worrying about compliance and, you know, help you further the ability to build exceptional user experiences that are also, you know, compliant, you know, for accessibility. And they are a startup, but we're huge fans. We talk to them on a regular basis. Hopefully in the coming months, there are things that we'll do together that you'll see popping up. But yeah, those are the ones that come to mind immediately. In the fintech space, I believe it's Barclays that does a phenomenal job making sure that their products are accessible. And given how much service they provide to people, that's always good to see. But you never want to prevent anybody from accessing their finances, right? And I'm not going to name them, but there's a number of companies that we're working with right now that are super eager to make their products accessible. So, you know, if we ever talk again, or, you know, you follow me, you'll see that that I'll be promoting those in the coming months, because, you know, kudos to them for saying, like, this is not okay. We need to be better. How do we do that? That's the first step.
If we talk about mobile accessibility and making sure that your product or website can be used from the phone, is that an angle on your work, or is it just a universal truth these days?
Sure. If it impedes on the, I mean, like when it comes to, you know, we see when we're designing and building responsive products that, you know, you scale down to a certain amount and shit just breaks, right? Things aren't set up proper hierarchy. If someone can't easily navigate that just by scrolling through, what do you think it's like for an individual using that with a screen reader? If we're not telling the system how to read our website when it scales down to, you know, a certain breakpoint, well, then a screen reader can't easily navigate through that. And on top of it, if you have, you know, buttons that are all of a sudden hiding behind other buttons, well, then someone can't access it, especially if there's mobility issues there and, you know, they can't easily tap it. They, you know, they need to scroll in other ways. And if things are hiding behind others, they're not going to be able to click that, you know, and so you just start to get into really muddy air, you know, muddy waters. And so again, accessibility is a byproduct. If it's not usable, it's a problem. And so, you know, part of our job is to figure out all the different ways to help you as a designer and developer and product manager. But, you know, for this case, you know, we start with designer and developer, account for those things and how we help you at the very beginning, you know, design for that, design for those cases. And I say cases, I'm not going to call them edge cases because they're not. They're very real issues that happen for more people than just this few cohort of individuals.
That's exactly one of my closing questions for you, because it's indeed a gray kind of thing. It doesn't have to be, you know, only providing your product for perfectly, I don't know, quote unquote, normal people or disabled people. There are people with some minor issues among us and every day that you can improve the product for. So are there any examples, I don't know, or reasoning that we can use to invest into these kind of gray area cases?
Well, the thing is, yeah, they're not gray areas, right? You know, we call things edge cases when we don't see them pop up often. But if your product is not built for a certain group of people, then you're not going to see them pop up because they can't use the product, you know? And so there's that side of it. The other side is that you didn't test with individuals with X disability. And so you're not going to know how your product can be used by them. And so for instance, like Gimlet Media was sued for not making their podcast accessible to the deaf and hard of hearing. And so, you know, back in the, you know, the Start community, we had a discussion about whether or not like that there's been precedent in the music industry. And if you can sue a podcast publisher, you know, for not providing a full text transcript. And like, if that's the case, wouldn't the same logic apply to music? You know, you don't know what you don't know, but you don't see what you don't see. And if you're not having conversations with people, if you're not thinking about this, like you don't see these individuals. And in turn, you don't see the fact that this is not an edge case. It's not a gray area. It's the fact that you simply ignored a very large group of individuals. And gone are the days where we say it's edge case or it's, you know, it's only a small group of people. No. There's almost 20% of individuals in the United States that have a registered disability. That does not include all of the people that don't have it registered because they refuse to go to the doctor because they don't want it to be a very real thing. And then even more so, all of the individuals that don't go to the doctor with their disability because they can't afford it or they don't have health insurance. So 20% of the entire United States of America, that is the largest minority group in the United States of America, if it were considered a minority group. How are you not accounting for that?
This is so eye-opening. Thanks so much for sharing your story and sharing all this information and, I know, inspiration in this area that we can take and go with it in our daily activities. We really appreciate it. Thank you, Kat.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I hope it's educational. I hope it's, you know, informational. I know that there's a lot that comes with this. I know that for a lot of people, it's very new. You know, we're working on making that a lot easier and giving you a home for that. At the same time, and in the meantime, if there's anything that we can help with, please don't hesitate to reach out to me. The entire team is on like Twitter, for instance, and Instagram, and we're eager, you know, there or in the, you know, Slack community that I said, to have these conversations and help you wherever we can. So please come join us in whatever makes sense for you.
So just to recap, what are those places and channels that you can be reached at?
Sure. So on our website, you know, throughout the website, you can find a few things. So our website is getstark.co. And on there, you can find access to our newsletter, which we send out every other week. And that has a bunch of resources and the latest news and resources and what have you. Then we have our Slack community, which you can also find on our website. You know, head down to the footer and join straight there. There's no blocks or anything. You don't have to be, you know, you don't need access granted. You can join right away. And then you can find us on Twitter or Instagram at GetStarkCo.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Kat, once again, and hope you have a wonderful rest of your week.
Thank you so much.